Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
You're about to listen to a new episode of the Redefining Cybersecurity Podcast with Sean Martin. Have you ever thought we're selling cybersecurity insincerely, buying it indiscriminately, and deploying it ineffectively? Well, perhaps we are. Let's look at how we can organize a successful information security program that integrates business culture with people, process, and technology to drive growth and protect business value.
Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are. Welcome to Redefining Cybersecurity here with Sean Martin, your host, where I get to talk about all kinds of cool things related to cybersecurity as organizations attempt to protect their information and the wealth that they're generating for themselves and their employees and their investors and the whole lot. Sometimes you can't protect them from themselves, though, and organizations, a lot of them have the right intentions when it comes to cybersecurity, but then the business does something and makes people scratch their head. Sometimes it's overtly visible in the form of a product launch. Sometimes it's covert and not as highly visible when it's deep into a feature that doesn't get promoted. And you might be lucky to see something come through in a policy. We're talking about privacy here, of course, and well beyond individual privacy, and you'll understand why in a moment. I'm thrilled to have Nigel on. Nigel, it's been a while since you've been on the show. Nigel Canning, it's good to see you.
No, great. No, thanks for having me on, Sean. Always a pleasure to come on.
And it's my honor to have a TikTok star on the show.
Yeah, I wouldn't say star. What's smaller than a star? You know, whatever's a lot smaller than a star, that's definitely me.
Well, you're a star in my eyes, Nigel. Star,
oh, you're so eyes. Sweet. You really are. I wish my wife would say that.
There you go. There you go. I think more people like other people to say stuff good about themselves. So, but anyway, you are amazing. And to be honest, I'm not on TikTok, so I only know that from a little birdie that said something that you're there. But I do know you're on LinkedIn, and I presume some of the same type of content we find there, which is what prompted today's conversation. But we're not here to talk about TikTok. We are here to talk about one episode that you did, a little video that you walk around and you talk about stuff. And this one caught my attention, caught my co-founder Marco's attention as well.
Yeah, well, I do like to do these kind of walk and talk videos. I think the only reason people watch them is they're hoping that one day they'll see the episode when I get hit by a bus. I'm not looking properly.
Will you become part of the zebra?
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be me. I'd be flattened on the floor. So
let's not let that happen, Nigel. Hey, pay attention, my friend. Watch out for those big red buses.
Absolutely.
So for those that didn't catch our end of year we call it a recap prediction, I guess, where a group of us talked about what might be coming. If they watch that, they know who you are. Maybe they forgot, but let's give them a refresher of who you are and what you're up to at the moment.
Yeah, cool. So as you can probably see from the bottom of the screen, I'm Nigel Cannings. I'm the CEO, co-founder of a company called Intelligent Voice. We're based out here in London. We're known very much for our secure confidential speech processing. So we did a lot of work for banks and insurance companies and governments and police and all sorts of people like that, processing voice, you know, voice identity, voice transcription, that type of thing. But we've actually got a kind of very deep expertise in all this kind of fancy large language model stuff that people are talking about at the moment. We've been working with transformers since about 2018, actually, since pretty much since the genesis of it. And very much in the kind of, how do you make these things secure? How do you make them explainable? How do you make them responsible? And also, how do you train them without getting access to a customer's data? How do you actually kind of tune them towards that? So I've kind of got a real, and the thing I don't normally tell people out loud is I'm a lawyer by training, but a technologist by passion. So I'm kind of one of those rare people, I think, who kind of came from the law and has a strong legal background, but actually is not bad at programming and thinking up technical stuff as well. So
you have a constant internal struggle there, Nigel.
Oh, it's awful. It really is. It really is. Yeah. So I spend a lot of my time kind of thinking about privacy and thinking about security and thinking about it from a kind of a practical perspective, but also from a legal and ethical perspective as well. And the interplay between them. And then, of course, you know, what we're seeing going on in the LLM world at the moment is just incredible from that perspective, the ethical and privacy concerns that are coming up. And as you said, I posted a video about one particular incident, which seems to have broken LinkedIn. I've got, you know, certainly my LinkedIn. So it's a really interesting time. So I don't know. Do you want to segue into it, Sean, or do you want me to talk about it?
Let's do that, because I think there are two points I want to make as we kick this off. So first, I mean, these videos that you do, I don't want to keep on this point, but these are from the heart videos. I mean, this is just you talking. So first, it's not rooted in any agenda or anything. Second is, the brand that you are discussing is one that caught my attention, because it's a service that we use. And then, of course, when you hear and read what you say, it's like, yeah, we know, but that this is possible, and we know it probably is happening. But kind of to my intro, unless somebody comes out and says this is exactly how we're doing something, you're not going to really know. So you mentioned in your intro, kind of I'll call it the transparency part of what you're doing. So how does it work? Why does it do it that way? How are we getting the data? All of that to me is transparency to show and demonstrate. One, you know what you're doing. You're taking time to think about it, and then it comes through in the implementation as well, hopefully.
Yeah.
But this case was the second half of my point, which is it seemed to be somewhat covert. And I don't know that they're trying to be malicious or try to hide anything in particular. Maybe the response tells a tale there. We'll see. So let's just get into it. This is about DocuSign using signed, I forget, they call them envelopes, right? So content that goes in their envelopes to train AI.
Yeah.
And so go take it from there, Nigel.
I know. It's a shocker, this one. So back in January, very quietly, DocuSign changed their terms and conditions. And they very explicitly in there said they can use your content to train their own machine learning models. I mean, it's as blunt as that, basically. Now, the problem is everyone wants to be a data company now. That's the problem. You know, data is the new oil. Everyone wants to be a data company. And companies that are sitting on a lot of data are thinking, oh, well, you know, we can use that. So the reason I came across it is I saw an FAQ pop up on DocuSign's site a few days ago, a week or so ago now, which basically said, you know, do we use your data to train our machine learning models? And it said, yeah, we do. But don't worry. We're anonymizing it all. And so that's fine. And that was actually the bit, you know, and we're only doing it if contractually authorized. So I did a bit of digging on this. As I said, I've got a legal background, so I read terms and conditions for fun. And what I realized was you cannot use DocuSign service without agreeing to these terms and conditions. So it was really disingenuous to say, yeah, only if you contractually authorize this to do it, because it's right there in the middle of the terms and conditions. And there's a whole bunch of things came out of this for me. I mean, one, the interesting timing of this is the FTC, so your Federal Trade Commission, about a month or so ago, put a load of guidance out basically saying, if you sneakily change your terms and conditions to allow yourself to train machine learning models using people's data, that's probably illegal. And I thought, this is great. So you've got, you know, DocuSign. So, you know, I use DocuSign. Well, I did use DocuSign. Let me be really clear. The second I saw this, we canceled our subscription. And I'm probably going to get, you know, lots of trouble saying this to people, but until DocuSign changed their terms and conditions back, I would urge people to look at using other services. Because, you know, all my contracts are there. I mean, all your contracts are there, Sean. Half the world's contracts are there. And you cannot anonymize data 100%. And even if you could anonymize it 100%, the other stuff there, it's copyright, it's confidential, you know, it's just like, I didn't even know where to start with this one. I really don't.
I know. And we were talking briefly before we started recording, just the term anonymize might mean one thing. And I've done some work in the healthcare space where de-identification is another, which is an effort to be much more rigorous. So you can't not just anonymize, but you can't, you can't use multiple contracts to decipher, right? So it's de-identification, not just anonymize. But both of those are about the identity. Yep. And to your point, it's the contract data, right? Which could be used to determine how much people make on their contracts, what their services are, what their liabilities and responsibilities, all this stuff, right? And forget about IP if somebody's submitting a patent application. I think somebody commented on that in your thread there. So it goes way beyond just the identity, way beyond privacy. We're talking intellectual property and all kinds of things that, as a data company, we'd be cool to have and find some interesting stats for, but geez.
I know. I mean, it's horrifying. And the thing is, there are a whole bunch of studies which show it's almost impossible to de-identify / anonymize a large volume of data. And there was a great one. There was an attack done on the US Census a little while back. And again, I posted a link to that in my comments on the video as well, which actually talks about how easy it is to reconstruct anonymized properly. They really thought hard. The census office about how to kind of put it into blocks of people and not down plus just using public data. So they would probably say that the value in the confidentiality there is probably far greater than whether someone can work out where I live and who I am. You know, I personally think I'm quite important, but you know, the law firm probably disagree on this. So, you know, but this idea of a reconstruction attack, and actually the census guys have actually completely revamping the way they publish census details, because they red teamed their own census records. I thought it was brilliant. It was so good to see someone taking it that seriously. And that's what DocuSign should have done. I mean, if they really intended to do this, at the very least, they should have had a documented, verifiable, replicable red team kind of report that said, we have taken an independent company, independent bunch of people. They've looked at what we've done. They've proven 100%. There's no names in there. There's no numbers. There's no dates. There's no whatever it might be. And also, they've attempted a reconstruction attack, and they can't do it. You know, that at least would have been, you know, something. But just to say in an FAQ, yes, yeah, we're anonymizing it, don't worry, it is tragic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, presumably, if everything was all text, there might be ways to find and scrape and redact and cut and whatever. But the reality is PDF includes, well, it's its own format, first off, not too terribly complex, but it does include other elements, right? It could perhaps include a code block. It could include an image. It could include an embedded video, right? Tons of things can be inside this thing that you're uploading that becomes part of their envelope that maybe previous, and I'm just trying to think of how what might be going through one's mind as they think about this process. They might have thought, well, we could do the anonymization easily with just data, but it was really hard before with all the other crap in there. Now comes LLMs. We can build something that not just analyzes the text, but goes into all the other multimedia elements that are in these PDFs or whatever documents or elements you're uploading, and can actually now do it. So I think the technology may have given them, we'll talk a second about the whole decision to do it in the first place, but may have given them the opportunity perhaps to do something that they couldn't do before, which I think is cool. The question still comes, though, is it something you want to do? And I think we're picking on DocuSign here, but I can almost guarantee for every DocuSign, there's another 100 that have done the same thing, and maybe 1% of them have updated their terms and conditions.
Well, and I think that's what the FTC were getting at, actually, was the fact that people are, you know, there's no informed consent. And, you know, I know that we here in Europe are a bit smug about all of our data privacy laws and that type of stuff. But there's a certain basic business sense in kind of making sure that your clients understand what's happening to their data and aren't surprised at some point later to find that you've done something with their data which goes against the whole kind of ethos of what you're doing. And I think, you know, a company like DocuSign, I think the thing that's so shocking about it is because you just assume that the data you put in there is kind of locked up and, you know, can't be accessed by anyone else. And the thought that anyone has got access to it is the frightening part. I mean, there was an interesting thing, and this is happening a lot, and you're absolutely right, Sean. So Microsoft, of course, have tried to put some clear blue water between themselves and OpenAI recently in a number of different ways. One is the Mistral deal that they did over here in Europe, but also they've got their own OpenAI enterprise service whereby you can use OpenAI models. But there's this huge, great big kind of block of text saying, we will not send data to OpenAI. We will not use your data to train models. And you're thinking, that's good. You know, I like that. But actually, if you dig into it, you'll see they've got something called an abuse monitoring process. And basically what it says is, don't ignore all the stuff we said above. We can keep all of your data. So imagine, you know, you're training an LLM for internal use, you're using highly confidential data. We can keep that data and the prompts that you've used for 30 days. And if we believe that the data is being used in an abusive way or you're misusing the service in some way, we can read it. And again, it's one of those kind of hang on a second. No one's ever done this before. You know, if you're using a search, you know, if you've built a search engine in Azure, you don't expect a human being is going to be reading your data. And so, you know, there's a real, I don't know what it is about LLMs particularly that's got everyone thinking, yeah, do you know what? We can just use this stuff. You know, we'll just use your data. We can even Microsoft, and people kick Microsoft a lot, but actually in general, their security policies are pretty good. You know, they do take, when you're paying for Azure, they take it pretty seriously. But, you know, the thought that there is an Azure service there, it's very quiet. That's the thing about it. It requires you to kind of swim into the terms and conditions and kind of work through and go, yeah, there's something going on there. So you're right. There's a lot of companies doing it, big and small. And they're quietly changing terms and conditions. They're quietly kind of re-architecting the way they use the data. I think it's got to stop. Yeah. I mean, I really think it's got to stop.
Yeah. Well, this goes back a number of years now. I know somebody who, she's no longer with us, sadly, but I know somebody who was working for the Big G and working as part of the voice product group, I believe it was. And the responsibility or the role required that she listen to half of the conversations mapped on screen to the transcript. Mm. So that was live transcript validated by humans. But of course, before the human validated, it was being trained in real time as well. Nobody expects their voice conversations to be monitored in real time by humans either.
No.
And then, of course, the technologies, it just scales that and makes it even more scary.
Yeah. And Amazon, funny enough, did the same with Alexa. So there was basically this big office block in Romania where they had people listening in to calls. And the problem with things like Alexa, of course, is that it has a lot of accidental activations. So it wasn't just the fact they were listening into the, you know, I've got to be careful what I say because I've got one of these devices very close to me or my lights might go off.
But, Nigel, but you know. I just got a different view of you, my friend.
but you know it's not just the, you know, the things you expect to say, it's things you don't expect to say, the accidental activations, all of which were being picked up and transcribed. And of course, again, it's just done so quietly. You know, you don't, as you say, you don't expect that. You really think when you're in your own home that, you know, the robot, it's just you and the robot. I think that's the point, isn't it? You know, we think it's just us and the robot, but actually in this, and it's a point that's been made many times before by people, but we are the product. That's the problem, you know, and the fact is we just don't realize it. So our data, our private data is fair game. And I suppose when just to hook back to the DocuSign thing, you know, I think where the line blurs there is, do you know what? If I use a free service like Gmail, you know, maybe I kind of expect that Google are going to run algorithms over it and serve me adverts. You know, I kind of get that. But when it's a service I'm paying for, and when it's a service that you expect a level of confidentiality in, and that kind of goes the same for the Microsoft OpenAI service as well. You know, you're paying for this stuff. I think that you shouldn't be the product there. I think the money that you're handing over ought to guarantee that, you know, you've actually become a consumer at that point, rather than actually being, you know, the yeah. stuff that you're handing over being part of that transaction.
I want to talk about the consumer. So we've become the product if you're using that service, mm-hmm. and DocuSign is, or I'm, yeah. So we're the product. They're using us, right?
Yeah.
They're the consumer of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Our data. But one of the other comments here, and I'm always thinking about this as well, third party risk. I don't know what it, maybe you can comment if you remember, can recall what it talks about in terms of who it shares that information with. Because DocuSign, many other services like this are embedded in forms, legal processes, custom apps, I mean, all over the place. So, and then I don't know for certain, I believe there's a marketplace where you can connect other stuff to DocuSign as well, not just embed it in other things. So there's a whole web there where presumably the insights are valuable to those other consumers. So they then become, they use our product to create another product that they pass on, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know. I can only assume that that's probably happening, but I don't know what, and whether or not the terms and conditions say it or not is another thing. But
well, it's the Samsung problem. So the Samsung problem, you know, where you know, they were uploading internal company data to OpenAI, they're using ChatGPT, and that data was getting regurgitated elsewhere. I mean, this is the thing. So going back to the third party consent problem. So yeah, absolutely. Let's say that you and I are involved in a transaction, Sean, and you know, we reach a price and we say, yeah, it's great, thanks very much. And I put the document into DocuSign. So I have unilaterally decided that we will use DocuSign as that. So effectively, I am consenting on your behalf for the data that you have got in there to be put into a machine learning model, which could then potentially be regurgitated, because let's say it doesn't get anonymized quite as well as it should do. Perhaps, you know, Sean's name comes out because of, you know, people, you know, it's been mistyped slightly. So someone's put a space between the S and the E. So the NLP didn't pick up that it was a name. So actually it's there. You know, and that's the sort of stupid stuff that happens, you know, in some cases. So, you know, DocuSign would say, well, actually, before anyone uses the service, when it gets routed to you, you click on something saying that you consent to use it. But actually, you know, really, I forced you into doing that. I am the one who's made you do that. So, yeah, so there's a whole issue of me uploading your content to DocuSign for them to then use to regurgitate to someone else. Yeah, I mean it's horrendous. I mean they do say that it's only internal, you know, they're not sharing it with anyone else, so I just feel so much better about that. You know? Right. Great, that's right.
So what I don't want to presume what responsibility or liability DocuSign might have, but what do you think needs to happen? I mean, so we've talked about the FTC thing. I didn't look closely to see when the timing of that was compared to this and responses and things like that. But do you think that will have any teeth? And of course, that covers the U.S. You touched briefly on some of the things. They're just not using services that in the UK and the EU that do these types of things. But how do you know, first off? And then what's going to have teeth to bring visibility and action?
Well, I think that what you have to hope is that something like this really grabs the attention of people, that what, you know, that the only thing that's really going to stop people doing this is where suddenly half of a company's subscribers say, we're not doing this anymore. So, you know, we know that regulatory pressure takes a long time to ramp up. So, you know, people get a bit of a slap on the wrist, they get a couple of $1 million fine, you know, everyone's like, yeah, you know, and it takes quite a long while. And we see this in Europe as well as in the US, that, you know, the big fines take a long time. So, of course, in that time, someone's had first mover advantage. It's this kind of, you know, move fast and break things attitude that comes out of California, which is kind of a great, you know, it's a lot of great companies have come out of that. But when you apply that mentality to this type of process, which is a very structured, very rigid process, one that should be highly confidential, they're going to get away with a lot. So I think that it's customer pressure that's going to do it. And I think there's actually, I've got an idea for a new product, which I will share with you here first, Sean. Okay. And you and I can be partners in this one. So I'm actually seriously thinking that any company who uses cloud products or any type of product will be able to just use a service which will alert you when the terms and conditions are changed. And also, using generative AI, tell you what those changes are as well. But I actually think, you know, there's a real supply chain issue here, because, you know, we sort of know what we're signing up for when we sign up for things. But when was that? If you look at all of the services that you use, Sean, and, you know, we're here on a recording platform now, you use email, you use instant messaging, we all use. When was the last time you actually sat down and said, have those terms and conditions changed since we first signed up for that?
So for the silent ones, never. For the kind providers that send me an email that say, we changed, thank you for recognizing that you'll be using the service under these new terms, which I never read.
Exactly. That's right.
And then there's the, it's funny. I don't know. Well, maybe it's not funny, but the only ones that catch my attention are from publications that say, we're updating the terms. We haven't seen you engage in a while. We're going to disable. Of course, most of those are just subscription, free subscriptions. I'm paying for them, but
yeah,
those ones trigger me to think, oh, I might go look and see and at least engage so I don't get disabled. But for ones that are purely terms and conditions, I probably don't care. And I do. It's just to your point, how do I know? How do I know? And how do they change? But more importantly, because all that stuff, as you know, is legal mumbo jumbo as well. What's the real impact to me?
Exactly.
To the people who interact with me, in this case, people that do contracts with us and whatnot, contracts we do with or other organizations, right? Things like that. Because to your point of their customer base needs to speak up. There are two customers, right? There's the one that holds the subscription that sends the envelope. And then there's the poor sucker on the other end that says, that's about to get a business deal that says, man, I'm not going to sign that contract because, and then they're not going to want to lose that business deal just because the signature comes from that service. It's going to be a hard nut to crack from that perspective, but I don't know, maybe something will happen that way.
Yeah, well, I think you know, it's this type of outreach, Sean, and thanks very much for having me on, because, you know, it's only by talking about these things and exposing them on, you know, I did my funny little video on LinkedIn, and it's just gone mad. I mean, I was, you know, I've done about almost 100 of these videos now, just walking along, just talking about different subjects, often in and around the AI space. And I picked on this because it had a really nice crossover for me between my kind of legal background and my AI background. It was the two kind of clashing together. And this is my most viewed video ever, because I think it's hit a nerve. It's, you know, people are saying, hang on, my data is my data. And when I've paid you, you know, it's obvious. If I send data to ChatGPT, everyone knows that it's going to get used for training. You know, yes, there's an opt-out, but, you know, realistically, if you do that, that's fine. But if I send it somewhere confidential, it has, honestly, it's made me think now, I am genuinely going to start going around and checking up on the terms and conditions of all the things that I'm using. I pay for Slack, for example. I bet you there's something deep in Slack. I mean, Slack, the lawyers at Slack, please, I've not checked yet, so don't take this as read, but I bet you there's something in there which says, oh yeah, and by the way, we can take all your chats and use them to train our machine learning models. I think Zoom did something fairly similar as well a little while back. Again, they changed the T's and C's to allow the use of your data. This was their AI companion product. So I switched it off because I realized that actually this data was going to places that you didn't realize to be processed by people you didn't know for reasons that you weren't really sure about. So, you know, in Europe, we've got a bit more protection. You know, theoretically, If your personal data is being processed, you're supposed to give informed consent for it. In practice, particularly if you're in a business, because you're subject to the fact it's done by the company, the company has certain rights vis-a-vis your data, it's a bit more opaque. It's nice to see in the US there's been a lot of moves towards greater privacy. I mean, we have seen, from a top down, from an executive level, that there's much, much more focus on trying to preserve people's privacy and think more about it. Whether if there's a change in administration, you'll still have that same kind of momentum behind it is tough to know. But I think, consumers, ultimately, big companies only care about, the, as we say over here, the pound in your pocket. So, the dollar in your wallet, that's what people care about. And so consumer education, customer education, supply chain education, that is really the important thing here.
Yeah, and taking a moment to pause, because you mentioned dollar in the wallet, pound in the pocket, and you mentioned Zoom and its recording, and I know there are countless organizations using other call recording services that transcribe sales calls. Yeah. And I'm just thinking about the conversations between security vendors and security leaders that the vendors are selling to, talking about the change in their environment, the challenges they're having, the breach they just had, and they need protections, and a lot of interesting stuff in those calls. That I'm sure the terms and conditions when somebody bought that call recording service that's going to transcribe the whole thing, and they probably said we're going to use AI for this stuff, of course, because they have to transcribe it. So the terms and conditions didn't change, but people are still accepting that we're doing that. So that I think at a personal level, we have to figure out when and where this is appropriate, and at least make a conscious decision that it's okay. I mean, I think we all kind of blindly click the yes, it's okay that this call is being recorded. This one in particular.
Yeah, well, it seems fair enough.
We were on the record.
If we didn't record this one, it would be somewhat pointless, I think. But yeah, but yeah, and it's what I do for my day job. I mean, we transcribe recordings of meetings and things like that, but we do it with the express knowledge of the people who we're doing it for. It's done for regulatory purposes. I mean, the regulator insists it's done. But yeah, for a lot of us, you do go on a sales call now, and there's, the helpful bot is there. It's the company who you're calling bot, and it's like, what the hell, because I know
some meetings I've had, the invites I send, I don't get a response from the person, I get a response from the recording bot. they're going to be there before the actual person.
Yeah,
is.
Exactly. And the fact is, you don't know where that's going. And it's a very difficult, I always tell people if I'm recording a call. So we do a lot of call recording. I send emails out to people. I say, we're intending to record this conversation. Let me know if you don't want to, very explicit about it. But to turn up on a call and the bot's there and you're like, where's this data going? Who's going to see it? There's going to be a massive data breach at one of these companies, and all sorts of very personal and private data will be exposed. And I say that as an absolute. And you, as a cybersecurity professional, know that these breaches are inevitable. It's not a question of if; it's just a question of when. And if it's not properly protected, if it's not if it's not stored securely, if it's not encrypted properly, this stuff just gets out there, and it's scary stuff that we're allowing it to happen. I mean, it's even worse though when we actually click the accept button and say it's all right for you to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So at the end of the day, we're all people on the web. Somebody said that the other day. We're all people on the web. For me, this should raise a flag on a personal level to take notice and take inventory on what's going on, to your point. earlier. I think from organizations that are building products and services, I beg you, please don't do it just because you can. Please don't try to ignore that you're doing it and that we become the product. Don't try to sneak it in the terms and conditions. If you are doing it, don't try to sneak it by not putting it in the terms and conditions either. So I think we've talked a lot about those two audiences. My core audience, which also fit those audiences, many of them also build products and are people, right? People working for companies. But my core audience are cybersecurity leaders and business owners and security practitioners. And I'd like your point on this as well. But my advice to them is this is something that they probably need to look at. It's a third-party risk assessment. Maybe they need to extend that program to look at the terms and conditions of the providers their organization's using, the types of data that's going into those services. Well, that's probably first, but I think they probably do that already. What data is going into these services? But then what are those services doing with that data and keeping abreast of the terms and conditions there? Any other points to that group, do you think, Nigel?
I think going back to what you said before, you know, for themselves not to be tempted to go down that route, you know, I think that your audience is one of the most kind of risk averse and quite rightly audiences that anyone could ever address. And I don't think any of them would be thinking about it. But the key thing there, I think was your last point, was not just checking it when you sign up, but making sure that you have a regular review process as part of your supplier management to ensure that these things are not happening. And actually even kind of stupid stuff, just like staying on top of people's blogs, because actually I pick up a lot of stuff just because a researcher at such and such a company has released a paper or has written a blog post. And you're like, hang on a second, what they're describing is not what I would expect. So I think it's not just the terms and conditions. It's a holistic look at your supplier and just make sure even job ads. Do you know what, Sean? Job ads tell you more about what a company's intention are than almost anything else.
Interesting.
You know, if you see a job ad and the company whose data you're giving it to are talking about, you know, someone who's an OpenAI specialist or someone who's got experience in using APIs for, you know, run fast, right, in the other direction. It's
we have 10 recs for data scientists.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like quick that way, exit.
Yeah. An interesting point, Nigel. Interesting point. All right. Well, I'm glad you brought this to our attention. My goal isn't to shame any organization in particular. I think we need to point it out though. I'd be very welcome to have a representative on the show to describe what's going on, what they're doing. So if you're listening and you want to share, I'd be happy to have you on and bring that perspective to bear as well. But for me, my whole point of, yes, I care about society. I care about us as people. But my whole point is for the security leaders and organizations that are bringing these products to market and have a responsibility to their customers and are using these products and also have a responsibility to their company and their customers.
Yeah.
So there's some things to think about because of this, and I'll let somebody else deal with the FTC part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not interested in that, but I am the outcome, whatever it is, but I'm not going to head down that path. But anyway, Nigel, it's been fantastic. Anything else you want to add before we wrap?
No, Sean, just thanks again for having me on. It's always a great pleasure to these are really important issues, and I think, as I say, your audience are the type of people who will take this very seriously. And so, you know, I'm delighted with that. So again, thanks for having me on.
Yep. Thank you. And thanks everybody for listening and watching. I'll of course include the link to the LinkedIn post, which is full of resources and interesting comments from throughout the thread and a bonus TikTok-like video of Nigel. So keep in touch with Nigel there too. He's doing some good stuff. So thanks, Nigel. Keep well. Hope to see you soon in London when we're out there. And everybody else, as Marco and I go on location to InfoSecurity Europe in June. So we'll hope to see everybody there for that as well. Please subscribe, share with your friends and enemies, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Pentera, the leader in automation security validation, allows organizations to continuously test the integrity of all cybersecurity layers by emulating real-world attacks at scale to pinpoint the exploitable vulnerabilities and prioritize remediation towards business impact. Learn more at pentera.io. Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Redefining Cybersecurity Podcast with Sean Martin. Please take a moment to rate the show and leave a comment. And remember to share the Redefining Cybersecurity Podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues. Come back for more conversations and follow Sean Martin as he continues his journey towards redefining cybersecurity.